are good for now. Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. We got a great old guest this morning, eh?
I mean, I wouldn't have called him old right out of the gate, but that's
you know
cool.
what I mean. Yeah. Jeff Saturday, former NFL center, current ESPN analyst. Welcome to the morning show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I mean, the old comment kind of hurt a little bit.
You know what?
I wasn't out there, you know. I mean, I wasn't out there last week, but it hasn't been that long. It's kind of painful.
No.
She's just bitter because she's a Bills fan.
Yeah, I'm just getting ready for your interview, and I'm not feeling great about the Buffalo Bills last night, and I know that you're not going to help me feel great about the Buffalo Bills. So, you know what? Just lay it on me thick. How tough was that last night for if you're a Bills fan?
It real tough. And here's the issue is that everybody in the stadium knew what they were going to do. They made it very clear on the first two possessions. This was going to be a game that they were going to just, you know, go win it in the trenches. And that the Bills, you know, had a hard time adjusting to it and allowed them to continue to be able to do that just doesn't bode well. When you think about the three or you know, the Patriots are probably the hottest team in the AFC. The Colts are the second probably hottest team in the NFC, in AFC. And even think back to the Titans. I know they had Henry at the time. But the teams that have played the most physical with the Bills have seemed to get the best of them. And that's one of those things that, you know, as a staff and as a team, you're going to have to kind of come to grips with of, hey, how can we match up with this? On the positive sides, though, in all honesty, like you had two shots at the end of the game to take the lead or win the game. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. But at least it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like what happened with Indianapolis, where it was kind of they kind of got boat raced and couldn't find their way out. They did have an opportunity. They got to make those happen. I mean, when you think about the Bills and with the roster they have, you know, you got to find ways to win late in games. And unfortunately for them last night, they couldn't do it.
Yeah. I know you probably recoil at this when you hear someone like me, who's not a former player, who's just some like little guy from Canada go, hey, these football players are soft. You're like, hey, man, I'm going to push you over. I'm going to stuff you in a locker. But I think that the Bills are soft. And I actually liked Josh Allen yesterday. I thought that he looked like he belonged in that game. But that the rest of the team, that they just got pushed around, they got bullied. Like, you look at the like both those trenches you mentioned, not good. The receivers couldn't come up with plays. And then at the end of this, I'm sort of sitting back and going, well, they drafted Josh Allen because he's supposed to be able to play in inclement weather, and he's supposed to be able to be this guy that plays in these games in Foxborough or in Buffalo. And the rest of the team isn't really built that way, or at least it didn't look last night. Like, is it too much of an overreaction for you to look at this team and say, hey, you know, you're not built for the division that you play in. You're not built to win games like this, even if you just drafted a quarterback that is.
Well, I think you're built for it. I don't think you play to the strength of it. I mean, you know, like that's kind of my issue. And I think for me, and I'll start with the, I think on the defensive side, I think what Leslie Frazier has done throughout the season has been really solid. Like, I mean, even yesterday, I mean, giving up, what was it, 14 points? I mean, you can't be – they gave up a huge run early in the game and then kind of settled down after that. But my issue is with Daboll on the other side. Like at some point, the physicality of football has to become vital to your offense. You know, you have Breida now. You kind of went through two other backs. But the commitment to the run, and even if it has to be Josh Allen runs and sprinkled in, like there has to be a portion of your offense where you just line up and say, hey, you know, we're committed to this. And I think you're seeing teams that are willing and able to do that. They're going to show better as the season progresses. And you know, you're not going to play, you know, you're not playing the Jets in the playoffs, right? So they're not going to be these 41-point games. You're going to have to find some, fight it out. We got one possession left. We got to keep the ball away from them. Here's how we're going to do it. And that's the part where I'm concerned, because everything is so Josh Allen centered. And again, he is an elite quarterback. So let me just make sure everybody, he is an elite quarterback and all that implies, but an elite quarterback and good wide receiver cores, that's not necessarily drive sustaining type players. Like you want to have somewhere where you just turn around and he can hand it off and, hey man, take a play and go watch this happen. I don't feel like that's ever in their game plan. And that to me is what is the most concerning, is that, that when you look up front, the Patriots defensive line definitely got after the Bills offensive line. And then, but when the Bills did go to passing, I thought they did a pretty decent job of stoning them up front for at least, you know, at least, you know, part of the time where Allen could, but then the win conditions made it tough to do it, tough to complete it. So, yeah, man, I would like to see them develop into a more balanced offense that doesn't have to just revolve around Josh Allen throwing in 40-mile-an-hour winds.
Yeah, they ask him to be the quarterback and the running back. He's the entire offense. And yeah. I did feel like he, again, like you're right, he is an elite quarterback, and I thought he belonged to that game. I brought up how the guy didn't make the old Josh Allen dumb mistakes, but yeah, I don't know about the defense, because they gave up almost 6 yards of carry on the ground. And yes, there's that one big play that Harris pops off early, but he also has another one where maybe he pulls his hamstring, and if he doesn't, he goes all the way. I just want to, like, yeah, you're one of the best offensive linemen who ever lived. Like, you're going to walk into the Hall of Fame. You're like the center people think of when you're watching that game, and that just run blocking performance. Like, how did the Patriots do that? Because my dumb brain goes, you know, they're gonna run, right? And then, so stop it, run, stop it. They're gonna do it every time. They're doing it the whole time, and then they keep doing it, and they're doing it for 6 yards of carry. And I sit there at the end of it, and I'm like, I don't even know what I just watched.
I'm just gonna say it like this: like, I watched that game last night in my hotel room in New York City. And it was glorious.
Yeah.
And not because of who wins and lost,
yeah,
but because of the style of play. And to your point, it was very simple. Like, you knew there wasn't a lot of complicated runs. It wasn't like they designed this, super confusing run. It was power. It was toss, crack. I mean, it was all the things that you learned as a young football player. And to your point, you knew it was coming. And the Bills knew. I mean, you saw they would have 10 guys down and around the line of scrimmage, and they were, you know, they were pulling the trigger, man, trying to make plays. Some of their DBs, you know, they couldn't wrap up at times. Their linebackers got washed. And it's one of those things where this is New England's – this is their calling card, right? I mean, so when you think about – you know, when you break film down and you look at the Patriots, they are, this is who they want to be at the core of them. And then Mac Jones and all the plays off of that, it all works because we're going to do this first. I was surprised that the gaps and the responsibilities that the Bills defense had to take, they missed them. Like, the first touchdown, the safety, man, he is flying down to make that play on the edge, which is just a wide open cut. I mean, it's a one cut. And so I was surprised he didn't play inside out. And to your point, when Harris does pull his hamstring, it has to go out on the right sideline. But who at their core, when you know what they are doing, I was surprised that they could not get them out of that. I mean, I would have thought they would have gone either to run stunt or blitzes that would have allowed them to try to fill gaps quicker and not be able to get on the edge. But when you play 9-on-7 and you're the Patriots and that's all you do, and you're the Bills and that's not what you do every day in practice, you see a quarterback who's in gun and, you know, it's a one back type mentality. And, you know, the way you practice every day, it's hard to always fill those gaps and be right each play and every play. And it only takes a couple. I mean, you saw it last night, it only takes a couple plays in a game to be the difference maker. And that's what happened last night.
So you said that, you know, you spend some of that game waiting for the adjustment and waiting for the Bills to tweak what they're doing there. You, as an offensive lineman and a run blocker, at what point in that game do you start to think, hey, maybe we broke these guys or hey, those adjustments aren't coming and we can just kind of ride this. And what is, you know, what is that like for a group like an O-line to be kind of rolling like that?
Yeah, when it was 11-7, I thought the Bills are in trouble, and here's why: because they weren't doing anything, that I saw that would make you. I mean, they would bring guys down. They tried to start shooting guys through gaps, but again, you can tell they weren't proficient at it, right? Like, sometimes they would completely, or sometimes they would hit the back and tackle him, but he's going for 3 and 4 and 5 yards at a time. But, man, from an offensive line perspective, you are in a – I mean, it's as fun as it gets. And it literally is all the way back to, like, peewee football. Like, this doesn't even – this rarely happens even in high school where you are, you know, just – where, I mean, they could have literally gotten to a 4-point stance, and I know I'm getting into more, like they could have just, you know, hunkered down and understood, I am firing out in front of me, and I am going to run my legs until the whistle blows, and I'm just taking bodies with me. It got to be that type of game for the Patriots. And so, you know, from an offensive line perspective, man, you know you're going to fatigue these defensive linemen and linebackers. Let me tell you, everybody talks about analytics, and I get it. I'm a fairly smart guy. I understand there's a time and place for everything. There is nothing you can do when someone is just imposing their will on you. There's not a scheme. You know, when you're getting beat by the pass and somebody's throwing, you can go, oh, man, this route combination got us. They fooled us here. You know, they rubbed us here. So physically I got bumped off. When somebody just goes, hey, man, I'm gonna line up right here. I'm going to come hit this left guard gap or this left tackle, and I'm going to run through you for the next 60 minutes. And you can't stop it. That hurts. That's soul hurting, right? Like, I mean, that takes you and crushes you because you have no answer. Like, it's not schematic. It's technique and fundamental, and they're better than me at it. And that is one of those things that's tough to recover from.
Man, it was – I think we booked you to come on the show before this game happened. But, like, the whole time I was watching, I was excited to talk to you about this. It's like you just don't see it, man. Like, you just don't see this. And, like, so in we're up in Canada, and there's a lot of high school football teams that are good, but quarterback play, like, the ball is different, and the conditions are really tough, and so there's not a ton of even higher-level high school programs here where there's a lot of throwing, right, where it's a lot of throwing. It's a lot of runs, run, multiple running backs. And when you watch a good high school football team up here play, like, not, I don't want to say a bad one, but just one that's out of their depth, that's what you feel like. Like, this is unfair. This doesn't feel right. Yeah. These guys are just breaking them. They are just bullying them. It was weird to watch in an NFL game. It was weird to watch it in pros.
I fully agree. And I coached high school football, and I'm telling you, like, Friday nights for us, this is what it looks like. You know, guys getting to wing T, and like you said, you're getting hit by three different backs at three different times with a single wing, and they are doing it. I will say this about the NFL. When you look at when I look at the NFC and I look at Arizona and Tampa Bay and Green Bay, these are physical teams. Like, Arizona calls the most runs in the NFL right now, right? They're calling runs at like a 43% rate, which is the highest. You look at Tampa, they can run the ball, and they have a very physical offensive line. You look at Green Bay with Dylan now, and then you flip it over and you're looking at the Colts and the Patriots and what these teams can do. It should put people on concern because, again, to your point, it becomes unfair when you can just dictate to people because of the way that you can run the football. And by the way, when it's not 40 mile an hour winds and you can play action, those safeties and corners who are coming to run through those gaps, they can't do that. So that opens it up even more. So people will be like, oh, if the wind was different, it would have been different. No, the wind ain't different. It's going to be even worse because if you can run it like that in the wind, when everybody knows you're running it, and then now you can sprinkle in play action, oh my word. Like it completely opens up your offense. And that's when it really gets pretty from an offensive line perspective.
So we were talking about how this game was just out coaching. And even though some people don't want to admit it in the post game conferences that, oh, don't give Belichick more than he deserves, I think that we definitely need to talk about the type of way that he just came in and just annihilated the Bills. Can you maybe better explain how Belichick doesn't let you do things or doesn't let you get comfortable, takes away your favorite thing? It seems very simple when it's just like he just takes away all options, but maybe that's something as a former player you can explain of like what does he do and how does he do it?
Oh, listen, he did it to me. I mean, you know, look at like when I was with the Indianapolis Colts, you know, we had some of the most competitive football games between the Patriots, right? AFC championship games twice, and we split those. And I'll just give you a snapshot, right? So you think about last night, they start the game by playing man coverage. And so they give you one defensive look. By the second half, they're running basically all zone and they're giving you another look that Josh Allen has to prepare for. And then at the end of the game, they give you an all out blitz look, a zero blitz at the end of the game to kind of finish off that last drive. And when you think about all the processes that you go through, very rarely in an NFL game do you have to adjust. And I can literally remember games where they would play us one way in the first quarter, one way in the second quarter, one way in the third quarter, and in different in the fourth quarter. And you just to have that many players well-versed doing that many different things is remarkable. That he has his guys prepared that whatever we call, and again, the guy who makes the play to knock the pass down, he's a backup. Right? I mean, this is a backup player, no different than like Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl many years ago, right? Like here's a guy who, you know, is not on the field each and every play, and he comes off and falls off on that route in that man coverage to knock that pass down that Allen's trying to squeeze in on the backside. It's pretty remarkable. And again, that to me is what goes to coaching. I mean, like some of it, when you just line up in power formation and you're running through people, that, I mean, that's a thing of beauty, but that's player on player and they're kind of beating each other up. And so it's not necessarily, oh man, he just out schemed you. They're just, they're playing better than you, but it's all the adjustments that he makes throughout the game that really separate it. And again, that his players are that well-versed in that many different defenses. And again, I can't tell you how many times I played them and you would go thinking they're going to give you a one defensive front and they give you a completely different one. You know, you think they're going to be in a 3-4, they're in a 4-3, or all of a sudden they're running bare the whole game. I mean, they will do whatever it takes that they think gives them an advantage, even at one position. If they feel like 4 out of 5, you have them licked, that one that they feel like they have the advantage, that's the one they're going to build their defense or offense around, and they're going to ride it. And they feel like that's the way you win games, and it's proven to be true.
So that's why I loved when Aqib Talib joined the Manning cast last night. And I do watch it. I don't know if you can watch it. Like, you know the guy. You're like, I can't do this. I've already heard all Peyton's stories. I don't want to hear him talk to David Letterman. But I just want to watch this football game. But it's just like, I'm glad Ailish brought that up. And I loved the way that you explained that, because there is this weird thing that we do with Belichick where it's just like, yeah, he takes away what you want to do. And it's like, okay, that's it. And then like, that's all we get. And it's like, no, go in deeper. And then like you have Talib on that Manning cast last night and he's explaining why the Patriot way is the Patriot way. And it's just kind of simple things, right? Like show up on time and make sure you know your stuff. And that's all Belichick's really asking you. And when you give that answer, you go, that's why. That's why, because it's obviously so time consuming and you really have to just have it drilled down. And I just can't imagine like Bill Belichick, if you blow an assignment or you don't know something and it's because you didn't put the time in, it's like, that's where his mystique, or that's where his like, oh my God, don't get on that guy's bad side. When I hear you say it, I'm like, that's it. That's the thing that would make you terrified. Cause that's all, like, that's what he's asking you to do.
Yeah, think about this. Stevenson, their running back, early in this season, he has a fumble early, and I think they benched him for like 3 games, right? Or two or three games, and he's kind of in the doghouse, right? I think one game he's even inactive. Right? I mean, it was like a big deal. Mm-hmm. He comes back in, gets another opportunity, and he misses a blitz pickup. So this for people who don't know, so a running back, when you have a pass play call, he has pass blocking responsibilities. He whiffed on it or made a mental error on it, and he got benched again. And I think it was for another game and a half. Like, just to show you, if you're not mentally on your P's and Q's, you're not going to play for him. And you saw how good that kid was. I mean, that kid is electric. I mean, he is a freight train coming downhill, and he played great when Harris went out last night. He played great. I think it was against Cincinnati a month ago when he was the only guy. Like, this is a player, and that Bill Belichick will say, no, you're not going to play because you don't know what you're doing. That speaks to how he dictates to his team, this is how we're going to win. And if you're not smart enough or not bought in enough to do it my way, I'll find somebody who is, and I can find the talent, or I'll work around talent to find the best guys that are going to be playing team football. But I love that, and I appreciate it, because it means we're all accountable. And from a guy who's trying to play on a team of 53 and understanding it's going to take everybody, that's the part that sets him apart as well.
Man, this was really fun. Thanks so much for doing this, Jeff. Again, former NFL center, going to be a Hall of Famer someday. Current ESPN analyst. And I got to tell you before you go, I played in a fantasy football league now for, I want to say, about a decade. That's called Jeff Saturday's League. And my friend Spooner runs it. I've never asked him why he calls it that, but we got to get you to join. All right. Like you got to join a league that's named after you.
I'm in, dude.
I'm dead serious.
I'm
like
in.
It's
You bring it. I'm yeah. in. I will have a blast. My son and I will play. We'll have a blast.
100%. I'm sending you the we'll get you Spooners. We'll get you in on the chain. It's a big buy-in, though, man. It's a really big buy-in. It's $25. So, you know, Canadian. So be prepared.
I'll save up.
Yes, be prepared. Jeff Saturday, thanks for making time, buddy. This was great.
I had a blast. Y'all have a great day.
See you, man. So.
That is a good guest.
That was a really good guest. That was a really good guest.
He's the best.
That was quite good. I love when you get somebody who can explain sports to you, doesn't talk down. Listen, sports are hard because it takes you a lot of time to learn them. But if someone knows what they're talking about, it should be easy for them to explain some of the concepts. And listening to a Hall of Famer like Jeff Saturday break down what it's like to play against Bill Belichick and what it's like to be run blocking, like what you saw last night, that was sports porn for me.
Also, like,
the joy that I get from that is immeasurable.
Also, like, he's explaining it really well, but he's also, like, midway through a question being like, oh, man.
Yeah, I know.
Like, he's so excited to, to tell you what it's like to just be running over a team. Yeah. The only thing I
like,
was surprised
you
about...
have no idea how sweet it is to watch your favorite team get broken that way.
Just that
my family.
Like?
That's what I was doing.
My family.
Yeah.
Just surprised Ailish didn't jump on when he was like, I'm a pretty smart guy. UNC, that's they're not an Ivy League.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know, it's true. You didn't do
it. I'm being very humble and stoic today because I've been defeated, and there will be a chance for me to rise again.
Okay.
Like a phoenix.
That was cryptic.
From the ashes. Yeah.
There will be a chance for me to rise again. I was like, okay, I'm not going to say anything to Ailish for the rest of the day.
That's right.
No more jokes at Ailish's expense. That's for sure. Shall we take a break and start to take some texts?
Yeah, it's Text Line Tuesday. Get going. That.
Oh, right. There's a thing.
It's time for something to chew on.
Yeah, that's right.
Brought to you by Great Canadian
Meats.
Yum, yum, yum. So we're going to be taking your texts. And, of course, if you have Bills stuff, Raptor stuff, whatever, fire it at us. But the Toronto Maple Leafs are back in action tonight. And there's some uncertainty all around that lineup for suspensions, for injuries, for salary cap. We're going to talk about a lot of that stuff. The one thing that I want to chew on here is that prior to the hit on Sandin the other night, our prep doc was full of questions about Justin Hall and where he fits, whether he's out of the rotation in terms of those seven defensemen, whether he's on the move. That's not possible now. You need that sixth defenseman, and maybe there's a cap shuffling move down the line, but for the next couple of weeks, they're going to need him. So far this season, of his six different defense pairs, and some of these are incredibly tiny samples, but
boy, six.
He's been paired with everyone for at least 2 minutes at 5-on-5.
Every
one of those players, except for Morgan Riley, and the Morgan Riley sample is only 14 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Has a better shot attempt share and possession share without Justin Hall than they do with him. Team wide. And keep in mind, the Leafs are one of the best possession teams in hockey. When Justin Hall is not on the ice, they get 54% of all possession at 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
When he's on the ice, that drops to 48.
Mm.
So you're going from a very good possession team to a negative possession team in the Justin Hall on-off splits. That's a little something to chew on, and let's check your temperature on that with the text line 590-590, because I don't know what the answer is. What I'm chewing on right now is, do you have to pair him with someone really good to try to anchor that? Or is he dragging down that pair? And the answer is, like, you've really got to shelter him in a third pair role. I don't know what the answer is right now.
So I want to chew on this for a second, because those numbers don't take into account his penalty kill stuff. So if you're wondering that
it's
right now,
purely 5-on-5.
That's what I'm saying. So if you're wondering that right now, saying, oh, this is why he's on the penalty, it's like, no, that doesn't count here. This is all 5-on-5. Part of me wants to defend him by saying, well, he's playing the hardest minutes and Muzzin started off slow as well. And how much of this is tilted by what has happened earlier in the season. And some of those, it sounds worse because the sample size.
Yeah, and he has more D starts than O starts.
Right.
There's a little bit of noise there.
No, there's some. But even when you take out all the noise, even after I do all those things, I go, yeah, but is it good? Like, nah.
No.
like it's still a problem.
You could qualify it to where it's like, okay, he's not dragging everyone down entirely, but he's still clearly, like, I mean, depending on how you feel about Liljegren's sheltering, he's been their worst defenseman.
Yes, which is tough. Well, I do feel about the sheltering that does come into question. I don't think that Liljegren would do that much better than Justin Hall, given the role or given the jump in minutes. Same with Dermott. I think that there was a question about Sandin, but those two guys is like, yeah, there's a reason Hall is playing up the lineup. There's a reason why Keefe continues to go with him on the penalty kill over those two. But, man, those are tough numbers to hear. And I know that, again, the sample is small, but to say that everyone's shot share has gone down, even in a time, like, that's one of those, well, you do take the tiny sample and extrapolate it a bit, given that there's a large sample of everything
everybody,
else.
Yeah. Everybody is kind of, you had told me, you know, half of them, oh, okay, maybe there's something there, but every single partner that he's played with.
Except for Morgan Riley in 13 minutes.
That makes, I'm going to give that one away. Yeah.
Great Canadian Meats should be giving you, like, something.
Give
him
a couple of beef jerky.
I believe they pay for the segment.
Yeah, but something for you.
How about some beef jerky for breakfast in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, give me that breakfast meat.
Yeah, where's the free food? That's what
I can't eat breakfast with syrup anymore. Yeah. Because Ailish is alarming us of climate change shortage.
If you can't eat beef jerky with syrup, then you don't want to eat beef jerky at all. What's even the point?
I like to dip my beef jerky in a little.
You guys are both Vince Vaughn and Wedding Crashers right now, just topping up the entire plate. You guys chew on all that and your great Canadian meats while we take a break. And when we come back, we're answering your texts, 590, 590, talking Leafs, talking Bills, talking whatever. That's next, The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. Good morning.
Welcome back.
The Fan Morning Show.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
It's Text Line Tuesday.
Sure is.
Blake did a lot of homework last night as well.
Yeah, it was more than I expected. You guys know I love homework, but...
You cut your little calculator out.
You know what, though? I really did. Like, that segment idea could not be actually more appropriate in terms of the way that it happened. Because I actually was like, all right, Blake, this... I literally told him exactly what I wanted. And then I think I watched Succession or Curb.
and he's grinding away in the spreadsheets.
I was working out and Blake texts me and he's like, that took me a really long time. I was like, yeah, thanks, Blake.
I mean, I got Succession and Curb in too, but I sacrificed the workout. So if I look a little puffy today, everyone, that's on JD and Ailish.
I just say, it couldn't have been further from my mind, you know? Like, I don't know if you do this too. I treat Blake like a computer sometimes.
Yeah.
I'll ask him questions. I've done it on the spot before where I've had to apologize to him after the show because he's done it. Where I've asked him a question, and he's like, yeah, hold on, I'll get that in a second. And then he gets it in literally 2 minutes, and I'm like, oh, okay.
It's
so
like,
then
remember
whatever.
Ask Jeeves?
Yeah.
It's like, ask Blake.
Yeah, ask Jeeves. Well, didn't like really have Siri. A long run. How do you remember Ask Jeeves?
I remember Ask Jeeves. That was kind of before you, like, Googled stuff. Like,
yes.
Just, like, ask this computer guy. And it was Blake running that site.
I think someone told you about Ask Jeeves.
No, I know Ask Jeeves.
And now you think it's like one of your own memories?
I have used this site before. The little red circle and the guy that's like, oh.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's not that old.
It's like a cool retro. That's vintage. She loves vintage clothes.
Yeah, that's true. I still use Ask Jeeves, actually.
Uses the vintage site. Yeah. Okay.
She refuses to use our corporate Wi-Fi. She's got an AOL disk plugged in there.
See, I don't know that.
See,
so
I was going to say, I was like, now that one do you get?
Ayla, she used to get mailed CD, like CD-ROMs.
Yeah.
From AOL to try to hook you on to their internet service. Mm-hmm.
How would that even work?
Exactly.
Honestly, I don't know.
And like it would have like 50 minutes of internet on it.
And it was sick. People would give them out to you for like free at a movie theater and you'd be like, wow, I'm going to keep this. And then you'd never use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I could have one MSN conversation. Yeah.
We got a text from Newfoundland, Blake.
Okay.
And I don't think it's your dad. His name's not Neil, is it?
No. And my dad would not text into this.
Okay. Show. So. I'm going to give this to you, a little Newfoundland love.
Did he say where in Newfoundland?
Just Newfoundland. So Neil in Newfoundland, let us know exactly your coordinates.
Yeah, we don't need coordinates. We just need townie or bay man.
Give me your street address. Morning, like guys. That. Big underrated UFC card this weekend. Any thoughts on the two title fights? I'm going with Peña to wear down Nunez. I always struggle with those. With her wrestling and pull off the major upset, Neil in Newfoundland.
That would be a major upset.
A major upset.
Yeah. She's plus 550.
Well,
this guy thinks that Peña is going to
Peña's going to wear down Nunez.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Plus 550 if you believe it. There's good money there, Neil.
Yeah.
If you believe it, you should also take it by stoppage because she's not going to win on points.
Yeah.
And so you should win it on a bet it on a stop, and that's going to actually it probably won't be that much more.
It's plus 1,000.
Okay.
On stoppage.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So no, that's not going to happen. But you know what?
It is a good card.
I will say this: mm-hmm. It's an incredible card. But I will say this: there is something to the idea of when there are these like so-called invincible fighters that are on these incredible win streaks and fading them as they get older and starting to look at it and taking just shots in the dark. The only problem I have with it is that Nunez is just so dominant and she's shown like mm-hmm. zero signs of regression.
And she's still only 33.
That's what I mean, is like for you to take that shot now, that's insane that she's only 33. I would have never guessed that. If you would have asked me, I would have said at least 36.
No, and she's
been around
like,
for forever.
Yeah, like she's been KO'd twice too.
Mm. When?
But like 2014, Kat Zingano knocked her out. And then like a little bit, she had a couple L's before she got to the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it has been since September 2014 when she last lost. And I don't know, there are not many fights within that streak where I thought it was particularly close.
No, she just, there are two female fighters that I've seen that just hit different, and it's her and Cyborg, where when they just connect flush, you go, oh my God, like that's just a whole different experience that you're in there with. Mm-hmm. And so I think that other fighters get in the cage with her, and when they actually feel that power, it's just it's a completely different dynamic, and it's nothing that like you can even really prepare for. I don't see this streak ending now. If you bet it, though, I think that you are doing the theory that I mentioned, which is, hey, there does come a time, and to be honest, it's kind of what I was doing with Conor McGregor the last couple of fights, is that mm-hmm. McGregor's odds were never really appropriate because so many people bet McGregor, and mm-hmm. yet he's been the opposite, where there's no signs of him looking great, and so... I think I've bet against him everything other than Cerrone fight.
And speaking of McGregor, that takes us to the other main event. The other mm-hmm. title fight is Charles Oliveira mm-hmm. against Dustin Poirier. And I don't really know where I'm at with Poirier. Poirier is a slight favorite in this fight.
Mm-hmm.
And his last two fights were both against Conor.
Mm-hmm.
And like he has, like you can obviously forgive a loss to Khabib. And he beat Dan Hooker in between the Conor fights and the Khabib fight. But I don't really know how to judge a guy coming off of two Conor fights, given how ineffective Conor's looked. And then on the other side, Oliveira is on like quite a run of his own. He's won 9 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that a guy who's looked that good and really hasn't, again, he's another guy that on that 9-fight win streak, one decision.
I love Poirier in this fight. I really
one
do.
One decision.
I really love Poirier. Like, if you think about Oliveira's last fight, he got chin checked
mm-hmm.
and he got kind of lucky. And if you think about like who he beat too, he beat a completely washed up Tony Ferguson and he smashed him around the ring and everyone went, oh my God.
But he couldn't put him down.
Yeah, he couldn't put him down. And also like then his next fight,
That was Michael Chandler.
I was kind of unimpressed with how he looked. Like Michael Chandler had that thing in the bag. And then Oliveira, like, good for him. He's hung in tough, and he was able to do it. I just think that Poirier is a different level than the guys that he's fought. And when I have one like this, I always lean towards the guy where it's like, Poirier has fought savages mm-hmm. over and over. And I really do think that this is sort of his time. I don't see how Oliveira is going to be able to stand with him. I think that Poirier, we're going to do a lot more. Ariel Helwani's coming on the show later this week, and he's going to talk about the Knicks, bing bong. He's going to be all about it because Raptors play the Knicks on Friday. He wants to come on and talk about the UFC.
That's going to be a tough one for me on Friday.
Well, I think he's not going to let us say bing bong is what he's going to try to gatekeep.
No
bing
way.
Bong. That's my guess. Yep, yep, yep.
Oh, I'm gonna
and we're not going to let
it.
Him say bing bong.
Yeah. We're not going to let him say anything at all. Well, that's the thing, though. He's not a Raptors fan. He doesn't care about the Raptors. He mocks the Raptors openly. But we will get a lot more into that card. But as of right now, where I'm standing is, to me, this is actually, I'm going to feel like a total idiot if I don't bet a lot on Poirier and he wins.
There's not a lot. So he's a favorite.
Yeah.
He's minus 163
but it's
right
not
now.
A lot. Yeah.
Even to finish, mm-hmm. he's minus 105.
Mm,
so that's, you might have to play the prop game to really get, or just bet big on
Poirier. I'm just going to bet big on him winning the fight. Are there texts or do we want to do Blake Holman?
There's text, but
we never got to do, that we were setting up the homework thing. I don't think we told the people where we're going with it.
We got lots of time for text later.
So Keep the text coming, 590-590. Anything that you want to talk about today, of course. But yeah, so this is the entire homework assignment that I gave Blake last night. Because again, I think he's a computer, and I ask him to do things that are probably a little bit more time consuming than I realize. All I really want to know, Blake, and I think a lot of Leafs fans want to know, is that they just lost Rasmus Sandin. The word on the little scuttlebutt, the buzz is, Kipper was saying that they don't think it's season ending.
2 to 3 weeks was the...
So if that's great. That's huge because he's making $1 million, right? Like, this guy's making 1% of their salary. He's making 1% against their cap.
Yeah.
That being said, one of the stories of this was that how the hell were you going to replace this defenseman? How are you even going to replace Justin Hall when he makes $2 million mm-hmm. when you already have a cap crunch coming? I was surprised, I'll admit, that Mrazek coming back up and Mikheyev rejoining this roster actually put them in a place where they needed to move a body in the first place. That kind of went, I thought that they were already set for this. I thought that they were already good for this. When Elliot came on and said, oh, I think that they were looking to move a body this week, that sort of took me by surprise.
Big time.
What do the Leafs need to do when they bring Mrazek back up to this roster?
So here's the most practical way to answer this is that we're in wait and see mode, and where, like, you saw at the end of that game on Sunday how quickly your cap situation can change, right? Like, Sandin's a poor example because he doesn't make a lot of money, and that's not long enough to be on LTIR. But say, you know, I don't want to say a specific name. Say someone gets hurt next game and they're on LTIR. Well, that solves a lot of this, right? Mm-hmm. However,
that's what the Tampa Bay Lightning do.
I mean, the St. Louis Blues are playing with 17 guys tonight because they have capped themselves backwards with this kind of stuff, and you have to play a game short before you get the emergency recall. So the Mrazek thing isn't as tough on its own. He's got two more games he can stay with the Marlies, so you've got until December 12th to kind of make that decision and juggle that. And then Mikheyev could potentially have a conditioning stint as well with the Marlies, which... Again, like, he might need that, but you're also using that to maybe delay this kind of juggling that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
December 19th is the day to watch here, because that's when the roster freeze happens for the holidays. It's also the Leafs are going to be done that four-game West Coast trip. So if they were going to get short at any point, I think it would be after December 19th when they were comfortable doing that. I don't think they're going to go on a four-game West Coast trip with only six defensemen. So until Mikheyev comes back, you're okay here. You can juggle it with Mrazek. What you're probably going to see is Anderson down, Clifford down. You probably roll with 12 forwards. And you're going to have to call a defenseman up, at least for that trip. I think it's probably Christian Rubens or Joey Duzak. Duzak's been really good this year, and he plays the right side. So that's a possibility there. If both of them come back, though,
there's also Alex Biega, I think is his name, who's their most, like, tenured NHL defenseman there.
Yes. So what you're running into, though, is if both of those guys are back and Sandin's still out, you're looking at either running with 13 forwards and six defensemen,
mm-hmm.
which is not something they probably want to do on any trip of length, or risking losing a forward on waivers. So... it's tough because your depth is sacrificed here. And having the Marlies close by and having a handful of home games coming up helps. But the real trouble here is that, like, there's a scenario where Mrazek and Mikheyev come back. Sandin's not back, but he didn't hit the LTIR. Uh-huh. And you have to play a game with five defensemen.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. To put that kind of a stress on your blue line mm-hmm. seems like too big of a pill for that team to swallow.
Like, I think you'd rather risk losing a forward to waivers than running short on defense. And the tough part here is Liljegren's the guy that can go down without waivers. So that's why I say it's potentially five defensemen, because, like, he's the guy that they could send down temporarily without risking losing him, whereas I don't believe any of their forwards are...
Kyle Clifford, that's what was my next question. They can put Kyle Clifford down, though, because he's already cleared waivers, right? And he's still in that 30-day period?
Yeah. Yes. And, I think I'm pretty sure Anderson could go down, too.
He's got to be able to be.
Yeah, so that. There's... Anyway, we're getting into the weeds here a little bit, but the short answer, to recenter this, December 12th, Mrazek has to be back up from his conditioning assignment. You can flexibility your way around that, doing some juggling, going short on forwards, and still probably have your seventh defenseman up. If Mikheyev comes back before that December 19th roster freeze date and before Sandin's back, that's when you get into some hairy scenarios where you're maybe playing a game with 17 guys like the Blues might have to do tonight. And there's obviously a hesitation. Like, it's funny, like sometimes teams run into this and it's like, oh, we'll play a defenseman up on forward. That's no problem. We'll just work with that. You are not doing it the other way. You're not dropping, who would it even be, Kerfoot or Engvall? Or
no,
dropping back. You're not doing that. So there's some real juggling ahead. And I will say that, like, if that happens, it's not a good problem, but like it means Mrazek and Mikheyev are back and Sandin didn't hit LTIR and you've had no other injuries since then.
Yeah, which is, again, a good problem. So you know what, though? I'm glad you did this because basically my interpretation is, like, this is the dumb guy Coles notes. Like, in Coles notes this, I think. You have some time, and this is an Elliot Friedman. I get to be the big J journalist with this one where he always says, Kyle Dubas says, if you have time, use it. And so if that is a Kyle Dubas staple, then they are going to take their time with Mrazek. They will probably continue to explore the trade market just a little bit, see what is out there, if there's any type of form of relief where they don't feel like the roster is taking a step back. And once they do, if they're not able to accomplish that move right now, if they do not feel as though there is something that gives them that little bit of relief, that even the period in which they would have to be short is very, very negligible. And it just means that you're not feeling as great about your seventh defenseman, which you do already without Rasmus Sandin in the lineup, and you're a little short on forwards. You don't have the luxury of, say, giving someone like Akasha a night off or being a little bit more careful with the likes of the Marners of the world, that you're actually going to have to say, hey, if someone's dinged up, if someone's beat up tonight, you're going to have to just play. We don't have the ability to take you out and give you a blow.
And then the other slim possibility here is, well, okay, the reporting yesterday wasn't accurate and Sandin's going to be out longer. And if he hits LTIR, then some of this accounting changes.
Yeah.
But let's not get
into it. But very little. So let's get back to the text line. 590-590. Hit us up at any point in time throughout the day. We've got lots of text line blocks that are still going to be coming up on the show. I know that there's a bunch that are in there. What do we got, Ailish?
Yes. So Aiden from North Bay.
What's up,
hello,
Aiden?
Up there. He specifically said, hey, Ailish. So this one's for me.
Oh, I thought that was it. That was the whole text.
No.
I was like, what's up?
With the two finalists tied in points leading up to the final race of the F1 season this Sunday, who do you think brings home the World Driver Championship, Max or Lewis? So I like to look at the Formula One Tech Tuesday. So Tech Tuesday, they kind of put out predictions of like which car is going to fare better. And they're predicting that Red Bull has a little bit of an edge on the Abu Dhabi track on the surface on Sunday. And I also kind of want Red Bull to win, even though there's the whole Max Verstappen not wanting to be in the F1.
Just
and
all around character-wise.
All around character-wise. I kind of like the villain in this one. And Lewis Hamilton, sometimes you just want to see someone else win. So I'm going to say that I think this weekend is going to be obviously phenomenal for F1, but I do think that we see a new champion this time around.
So for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix this weekend, Lewis Hamilton's minus 200 right now. Verstappen plus 187.
Ooh,
and then, I mean, everyone else's odds are so long.
It's going to be one of them.
Like, the bet should almost be set up as Hamilton, Verstappen, or the field.
Yeah. You know how much it would suck if somebody else like took top position?
Yeah.
I would just
Valtteri
be like,
or Perez.
Yeah, like get out of there. Don't let anyone else win. It's got to be a race to the finish. Like, this is for the championship. When has there ever been a head to head match into the last race of an F1?
I don't know. Season? That's one I can't answer.
All I know, I was going to say, I'm too much of a noob fan for that. All I know is that I cannot believe I'm more excited for F1 on NFL Sunday than NFL.
Yeah,
NFL,
it's a nice 8 a.m. too.
NFL number 3 that day because it's also the Grey Cup.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What a day that is.
Holy smokes.
I would do that, and I really am trying to go to the Grey Cup.
Caesars. I'm like, that F1 race.
Yeah, F1 at 8 a.m., and then Grey Cup at 4?
Normally,
6 o'clock. Well, that's late.
Normally, I would not even really bat an eye at some of the prices for the Grey Cup because I would say that this is a Hamilton party.
I thought we were getting free tickets. Anyone out there?
Yeah. The only thing is that I just came back from a trip where I spent literally, thousands upon thousands of dollars on tickets. I'm having a tough time justifying more money towards football tickets right now, and yet I still probably am going to end up doing it. But yeah, no, you're right. It is number three, because I just, there is something about the Grey Cup. I get sentimental about being Canadian, and it is one of those things. Like, it's an identifier for me. It's something that I've watched my entire life. And it really is the only time. Like, I've always grown up an NFL fan. Mm-hmm. I was never just like a CFL diehard and someone who watches every single week of the CFL. I watch a few games a year. I go to a couple of live ones. I've really enjoyed a few players throughout my lifetime. I love the CFL, but the Grey Cup is just the one tradition. It's just this one awesome tradition of, hey, this is our game and this is our moment. Always just a blast. I've always had fun, as I've outlined, the week lead up of parties. I think they're going to be spectacular. Pancake breakfast. Like, I just, I
no syrup though.
No syrup. That's why too much. So, by the way, I'm ready for it.
Just to highlight how tight this is. So Lewis Hamilton's won the last four.
Mm-hmm.
The closest in points any of those were 46 points.
No, this is insanely
And they're entering
close.
This final race tied to the decimal point.
Yeah, that's why I think I'm going Red Bull.
Yeah, see, Daniele's not here today. Yeah. And had he been here today, immediately would have had that. He's not a casual.
Big F1 guy.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? F1 fans, be like Daniele. Daniele is the most like welcoming F1 fan, where he gets excited and he'll say stuff to me that I don't understand half the time, where he'll be like, and then this car does this thing. I'm like, I don't understand what you're talking about. That's our producer, by the way. But he's excited that other people are a part of it. And one of the things I hate the most about what has been a part of like joining this F1 thing is like the odd super hardcore car guy.
Oh, yeah,
you're
only in on it because of the Netflix series. Like, yes, you're correct. I am only in on it because of the Netflix series. Thankfully, that helped me get in on it because I really like it.
And I'm sure Jacques Villeneuve didn't keep my attention after he was out of the championship.
And I had Christian Horner on. And we asked him like one or two questions about the Netflix doc, and he's super busy, so he ended up leaving. And you should have seen how angry some people were that we asked him about the Netflix doc. I was like, that's what we knew, and that's what we asked him about.
And this is the thing, I remember...
He's on camera like every week with a million other interviews, like there you could have him. Why are you mad?
And I remember running into this during the Raptors championship run where, yeah, there's always like a bit of gatekeeping to bandwagons or whatever, but what's more fun than you and a couple friends enjoying it? You and a lot of friends enjoying it. And if that's going to be, if the Netflix doc is people's entry into it, then it's great that there are fans like Daniele who are like, yes, come.
Yeah.
Come, let me tell you even more about it.
It wasn't really this way, I will say, though, with the Raptors. I didn't feel it as much with the Raptors as I did with the Blue Jays in 2015. Mm-hmm. Like, Blue Jays 2015, there was a real, like, gatekeeping of, you guys are bandwagon fans, and I've never understood that. That was the dumbest thing to me. I was like, who cares? If it means more to you, then just let it mean more to you. If someone's a bandwagon fan, they're just enjoying the moment, then guess what? It's not going to resonate with them for the rest of your life. It's like a real thing for you. So what does it matter if you're trying to take away? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you want more people around? Why wouldn't you want a bigger celebration? Like, you just want it to be you, the Blue Jays fans that have been there since like they won the first World Series. Like, it's so dumb. Yeah. Stop doing that. Whoever, if you're one of those people, like, ask yourself why you do that. It's the dumbest thing. Just let more people in. Include more people. It's going to be way more fun.
Enjoyment is not zero sum.
Yeah, 100%.